preventing hospital infections, helmets and head injuries, exercise and stress, and we'll take a look at the immune system. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week. I am fresh back from our family vacation for this summer, and I had a great opportunity to meet some of the listeners down in Florida while I was down there, but I really took some time off, so I'm really excited to get back here and get started again producing the show for you here each week. And I just want to remind all of you, especially those of you that might be new listeners here to The Nursing Show, that you can find a lot about what's going on in each episode, links to everything we talk about, the news items, the tip of the week, special guests and interview segments. All of that information can be found over at nursingshow.com. Head over there, check out the links in the show notes link right at the top of the page. Click that, find the episode you want, and you'll find all of the links for that episode right there. Plus, over at nursingshow.com, you'll find other articles and information posted throughout the course of each week, and you can sign up for the Nursing Show newsletter. There are also links to go ahead and subscribe to the show by iTunes, follow our video production of the podcast. So each audio episode is now accompanied by a video segment. You can find those videos over at the Nursing Show site as well. They come out about a day after the audio portion shows up in your podcast feed in iTunes or Zune or wherever the case may be. So you'll find all of those links and different ways to contact me over at the Nursing Show site. Of course, you can always contact me by email. nursingshow@gmail.com is the way to catch up with me. Go ahead and send me your comments, suggestions. Definitely send me any corrections. I try to make sure I have the best information here available for you, but sometimes I misspeak, and I really rely on all of you to keep me straight and make sure that I get the best information out to the Nursing Show community. So if you have a correction that I need to make, make sure you get that into me as well. And again, that email address is nursingshow@gmail.com. Time now to jump on into this week's news. And let's jump on into our first news item. This is a story I picked up released from the CDC, and they are finally starting to accumulate the data from the recent requirement that states start reporting hospital-based infection rates for their facilities in their state. And so the state laws are starting to force hospitals to comply with this reporting, and the CDC is starting to release the data, and quite frankly, it's shocking. Now, I have a feeling most of us knew this already. I don't think this is any big surprise. In fact, the state laws requiring that this be reported are coming about because of research and information that we have put forward into the medical community and for a long time. So it's not a surprise to anybody in our line of work, but it's still a pretty scary number. Looks like about as many as 99,000, nearly 100,000 Americans die each year as a result of hospital-acquired infections. And this is a number that is way too large. Obviously, there are people that are immune compromised. We'll actually be talking about the immune system and kind of doing a review of immune system later on in this episode. But certainly, there are people that are at greater risk, and they are going to die from just coming near some infection and infectious sources. But we know how dirty hospitals are. We know how sometimes lax our precautions can be. And so it falls to us, the nurses, to make sure that patients are complying with their restrictions on where they can and can't go, that we are complying with isolation rules and garbing ourselves appropriately. We should also be enforcing that the people working with us, that we are monitoring as they do their jobs throughout the course of the day, as well as patients, visitors, all comply with any kind of isolation that might be required for a patient that is infectious. This protects other patients, protects the rest of the hospital community. You know, just think about it. You have patients getting visitors. The visitors come in. They hate putting on the gowns. They leave to go make a phone call. Now they have to come back in and put a gown on again. They start getting lax. They stop washing their hands the way they should. And then they go down and they go and eat in the hospital cafeteria. And somebody else comes and sits down at the same table before somebody can come by and wipe the table down. Now that patient visitor takes it up to their immune compromised family member. And we have now spread disease to that new patient. That's just one way it happens. Of course, it happens in many other ways, but there are many things we as nurses can do to be vigilant for ways that we can change the way we act, the way our coworkers act, and of course, the way the patients and their family members act. We should encourage people to hand wash. We should encourage people to use the waterless gels. And we should encourage people and be vigilant when we have patients who are on some kind of isolation standard, that the isolation standards are met. Work with your infectious disease experts in your hospitals and facilities. Talk to your nurse supervisors, whoever the case may be. You should be finding out exactly what you can do to improve the infection rates in your facility. I'm sure this is already going on for most of you, but it just requires us all to think a little bit more frequently about this topic. Let's jump on into our next topic. And this is a prevention issue as well, a safety issue, but it has to do with just here in my area. It's summertime here in North America and all of the Northern Hemisphere, in fact. We have an international audience. I have a lot of Australian, New Zealand listeners, South African listeners. So obviously you are in the midst of your winter time, but here we have a lot of people that are out and about, including a lot of kids and adults who are engaging in summertime activities, bicycling, riding motorbikes, ATVs. Are they wearing helmets? Sports injuries that occur because baseball players, softball players aren't wearing helmets while they're batting. Perhaps we have coming up on football season here in the United States. Are people wearing the appropriate athletic gear? All of this goes towards preventing injuries in our patients. And so I would ask, are you doing something in your community to encourage people to take proper precautions? What are you doing to improve the usage of helmets in and around your community? Doesn't take much. Maybe offering a flyer to be handed out in community centers. Work with your public safety and public outreach people if you're working in a hospital. Work with your public health department if you're working in a physician's office. Get the materials you need to hand out to your patients and their family members so that they can have just that additional reminder to keep safety in the front of their mind, and that they should always be wearing helmets when it's appropriate. And in many cases, for children, it's required by law, but a lot of people don't enforce it. So it's important for us to really encourage people to think proactively on these situations. There's a great article in the show notes and the news items. I found it over at WebMD.com. You should definitely check it out, talking about sports safety and helmets saving heads. So go ahead and check that article out in the show notes for this episode. Finally, talking about exercise, we address this regularly when we talk about overall health trends, talking about obesity, diabetes management. We bring up exercise quite a bit here when we discuss these things between us here on the nursing show and as nurses in general. But there are so many other benefits to people getting even moderate or low levels of exercise on a regular basis. And one of them is that it is such a positive way to manage overall stress. For people that have high stress factors in their lives, and stress affects us in so many ways, it lowers our immune response, it causes us to just deal with so many things, have the tension dealing with hypertension, causing high blood pressure and other issues associated with job-related stress, work-related stress, increase cardiac problems. All of these things associated with stress can be better managed for people that exercise more. There was a study that looked at vigorous exercise putting the brakes on stress-related aging. Yeah, if you exercise, you'll actually look younger, stay younger, longer. How does that work? Well, we work out some of these things through vigorous exercise. It actually, the body helps us relax better at the other side. And we are able to sleep better. We are able to better deal with stress the next time it comes along because we're not as stressed to start with. You know, our base level of stress is lower. We have a little bit farther to go before we reach that high stress point. So all of these things really help us age better, not just deal with all the other factors of stress. So maybe you can use that as an opportunity to bring up exercise when maybe one of your patients is talking about getting older and wrinkles and all the other things that go along with getting a little bit older every year. Exercise will help you stay younger, look younger, longer, and maybe that'll be the thing that helps your patient decide to begin engaging in a regular exercise program. Remember, if you want to find any of these segments and links to these articles over at nursingshow.com, you'll find the link for show notes right at the top of the page. Go ahead and click that link, find the episode you're looking for, and you'll find the links to the news items for that episode. I urge you to follow up on these news items, print them out, take them into your workplace, share them with your friends, email them to people you know. These are great conversation starters and great ways to improve the health of yourself, your family, and your community. I'm going to jump on into this week's tip of the week, and let's go ahead and talk about the immune system. You know, we've covered a lot of things in recent weeks. We've talked about asthma and reactive airway disease. We've talked about the allergic reaction in general, and I thought it would be a good time for us to review the immune system, on top of which I actually got a couple of requests from listeners who wanted me to kind of go over some things about the immune system. Now, this is a very broad overview, and so I would urge you to follow up. I found some excellent links in the show notes to some really good sites that will give you some more in-depth information on the immune system. I'm going to do a brief overview here. I know I'm glossing over some key points, but I just wanted to be able to cover something very brief here in the next 15 minutes or so. And I urge you to follow up on the additional information. There are hours of additional information from the CDC, from the National Institutes of Health, and from kidshealth.org, which has a great piece of information on how the immune system operates. And it's aimed at teenagers, but I think we could probably understand it too. Good stuff, and you'll find all of those links over in the show notes for this week's episode. So what are we going to look at when we talk about the immune system? We're going to be looking at the purpose of the immune system, the organs and cells of the immune system. Also, we'll look at briefly at how the antibodies, cytokines, and complement system work, and the types of immunity that exist, different types of immunity that we have, active versus passive, and so on. Finally, we'll look at the labs that are associated with some of the aspects of the immune response. And finally, we will talk about some specific nursing considerations, something we should keep in mind when thinking about the immune system and immune compromise in our patients. What is the purpose of the immune system? Well, let me go ahead and read here what exactly the National Institutes of Health say about the immune system. The immune system is a network of cells, tissues, and organs working together to defend the body against attacks by foreign invaders. Pretty simple, right? Well, what are we talking about here? Well, specifically, the immune system is a very complex and yet very organized system. And it's amazing all of the things that it does. There's so much about the immune system that we could go into that it's really just so fascinating. And maybe I'll dig into more depth in a future episode. But it has to be able to do a couple of key things in order to work. First off, it has to identify a foreign invader. Sometimes that identification system goes out of whack, and we have the allergic reactions that some people get, or autoimmune disorders where the body attacks itself. But certainly, it needs to identify a foreign invader. It then, once it's identified the foreign invader and recognized it, it needs to generate a communication of what it's seeing. What is the foreign invader? What type of invader is it? What kind of defense system do we need to put into place to attack and destroy that invader. And some of those defenses are specific to that invader. Some of the defense systems are non-specific and just general barrier type defense systems. But all of those things are present, and it's important to understand how complex the system is. There are many organs made up to be part of the immune system. These are often called the lymphoid organs because their association with the lymphatic system, the transport system of the lymph, the plasma throughout the body, and where it dumps back into the venous system before it's reincorporated with the blood and pumped out of the heart. And that lymph system is where a lot of the immune cells transport or reside during and between bouts of attacks by foreign invaders. First off, the bone marrow is the primary source of production of all of our blood cells, and the immune system is largely comprised of the white blood cells. So all of these cells are made in the bone marrow, and then the specific types are sent out to different cells to be either mature or to be stored and were transported around the body to be on guard for foreign invaders. Also, the thymus is part of the lymphoid system, the immune system. The thymus located just behind the breastbone, and it is where the T cells, the T lymphocytes, go to mature. Once the lymphocytes are grown to a certain stage in the bone marrow, the T lymphocytes go to the thymus, and it's easy to remember the T lymphocytes. T stands for thymus, so it's easy to remember where that T comes from and how it's associated with the thymus. That's where the T lymphocytes go to mature into T lymphocytes. The other lymphocytes remain in the bone marrow to mature into B lymphocytes, and they're sent out to the body to be stored in the lymph nodes and prepared. And then the lymph nodes. And again, the lymph nodes, when we look at patients that have swollen lymph nodes, it's because they've got an infection. And those lymph nodes have swollen up because of the action of the lymphocytes. They are engaged in producing antibodies to fight whatever the specific infection is. And it's the swelling of those lymph nodes because of the additional production that's going on there that is a sign of additional white blood cell activity in the body. We don't need no labs. We can look at the lymph nodes and a general palpation of the different areas under the arms, around the base of the mandible. We can find and palpate those lymph nodes and see exactly what's going on there. What about the cells of the immune system? We've already talked about some of them. White blood cells, primarily. The leukocytes, they are a couple of different types. First off, lymphocytes, B and T cells. Remember, we talked about the T cells. The B cells are communicators and producers of antibodies. So the B cells have a couple of different roles where they are used in communication of and production of antibodies. Monocytes are additional cells, usually large macrophages. They are the phagocytes. They eat the foreign invaders. They consume them. They wrap around them. They form protective barriers around the invaders of the body. Phagocytes. Phagocyte means eating. So they eat other debris. They eat foreign invaders, cellular debris of cells that are destroyed by the body as they become old and die. Cancerous cells, as they're broken down, the pieces are destroyed and eaten by the phagocytes. This includes neutrophils, eosinophils, basophils. These are all specific to certain types of immune response, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on when we look at the lab values. What else? We have antibodies, cytokines, and the complement system. These are all really part of the overall communication system. The antibodies are created specific to a certain type of invader. The cytokines are the chemical communicators released by the various white blood cells to tell other white blood cells exactly what needs to be done next, whether it's a non-specific response saying, hey, mobilize the general phagocytes, the general macrophages to come out and protect this area. We have an invasion. We have an opening to the outside system. It might be a cut, some kind of a laceration or something like that. We have the release that tells certain T cells to begin to mobilize, certain B cells to produce certain antibodies. All of these are part of the cytokines. And then we have the complement system. Complement system is basically a series of cascading creative proteins. So they're inactive in their normal state. They float throughout the body, but once activated by a response to an antibody, that specific cascade of events occurs, and that complement system then goes to start attacking whatever the foreign invader is. And some, in cases of bacteria, these proteins continue down through that domino effect until they have created these series of tubes that have actually forced molecular holes into the bacterial cell walls. And then those cell walls break down, and the fluids inside the cell mix with those outside the cell, and the cell walls break, and then the phagocytes come in and destroy whatever's left over. So let's talk a little bit about types of immunity. This is something that comes up a lot. Some people break it down into a natural and acquired, and then active and passive. I'm going to be a little more simplistic. I think that the natural and acquired is pretty understood. If you think about our natural immunity, it starts off with the barriers our body provides. So the basic acidity of our saliva, of our skin, is one level of protection. The skin itself, is the skin intact, it will protect us from a foreign invader. Our GI system is built to destroy a lot of foreign invaders as they come into the system. And the first thing you meet is an acid bath. Oh boy, I can't wait to get there. So it's a great way to stop a foreign invader from going any farther into the system. So you can see that there's a lot of things that are natural immunity, as well as just the natural immunities to diseases that might affect a family pet. They don't necessarily affect us. And so that's one of the things we look at with things like the bird flu. You know, it's a bird flu. It could possibly infect a human, but right now it hasn't become something that affects humans, so that people can work next to a bird with the bird flu and not get the bird flu. These are things that we should understand. So what about active and passive immunity? Well, active, or some places have called it adaptive immunity, is really the immunity that we develop over the course of our lives in most cases. It's long-lasting. It is either conferred by actually getting a disease and surviving to the other side. Even small diseases or less severe diseases like the common cold, once you've gotten a certain virus, the reason you get better is because you've acquired an immunity to that particular strain of the virus. And then the next year, of course, the virus mutates and we get it all over again. But we have developed certain immunities. We can also get an adaptive or active immunity through immunization, by giving ourselves a weakened form of a disease, as most immunizations are. Giving ourselves that weakened form of the disease, it's not strong enough to make us sick, or in some cases not make us very sick, and we then build up and recognize that disorder, and we develop the antibodies necessary so that if it shows up again, we can just flip a switch and start producing massive amounts of antibodies and destroy the disease even before it starts to have an effect on us. In many cases, we never know that we were infected because our body has built up this active immunity because we either had it before or we were immunized against it. So that's what the active or adaptive immunity is. Passive immunity is a little bit different. It is short-lasting. It doesn't last very long because we are basically giving ourselves the antibodies themselves. We haven't given ourselves a form of the disease, and so our body's B cells have not built up that memory cell, that memory of what this type of disorder is, and so that memory cell never develops. We inject serum of the actual antibodies into the system, and the antibodies are present long enough to kill the disease, but then they are destroyed and broken down just like our own antibodies are over time. So it's a short-acting situation. This is seen in a natural way through childbirth. The birth mother confers some of her own immunity to the baby for a short period of time, and that can be extended for a certain period of time through the early mother's milk that the baby would get if they were nursing. So this is another aspect of passive immunity, but it is a way that is conferred naturally. We can also inject serums into patients, and these antibodies are injected directly, but again, they're broken down very quickly. So we have certain diseases where we can actually give someone the serum to fight off this invader. I'm going to go a brief overview of labs here, and I just want to show you this. Basically, white blood cell count is what we look at first. If the white cell count is elevated, then it's a sign that there is an infection likely somewhere in the body. Normal range for adults ranges from 4,500 to 10,500. That's a huge range, when you think about how broad that is. But people's white counts can fluctuate greatly over the course of a day, as much as 2,000 or 3,000. So that's a broad range for a reason. People showing signs of infection can get up into the 100,000 count range. So certainly, if we have elevated levels, that's a sign of infection. Decreased levels, low levels of white blood cells are signs of immune response. So something to keep in mind there. I'm not going to go into the levels for all of the different types of white blood cells because that'll be something that'll print out on your sheet anyway, but I'll just go cover a little bit about what each one does. When you get a CBC, complete blood count with differential, the diff, that diff is going to show you the breakout of all of the different types of white blood cells. You're not just going to get a white blood cell count. We're going to find out exactly what white blood cells are present and in what amounts. So we will break it down into granulocytes and agranulocytes. The granulocytes are your neutrophils, eosinophils, and basophils. And the neutrophils are the most numerous of the granulocytes, and they are most commonly seen as a response to bacterial infection. So an elevated neutrophil level would be a sign of a bacterial infection. Eosinophils, seen elevated in an allergic response, also a response to parasites. So if you see this, it could be a sign that there's a parasitic infection going on. And then basophils can be seen in some cases in leukemias, also inflammatory disorders. So that can be another indicator for patients that might be experiencing something like an arthritis, an autoimmune disorder, ulcerative colitis or something like that. It could be a sign of an inflammatory response. And that's the basophils. Agranulocytes refer to the lymphocytes and the monocytes, and the lymphocytes, general immune response. So if you have elevated levels of lymphocytes, we have some kind of infection response going on. If there's decreased levels of T cells and B cells, well, guess what? Those T cells, if they're decreased, that's a sign of immune compromise. And it's one of the things that people look at for our HIV and AIDS patients. How at risk are they from going from being HIV positive but non-symptomatic for AIDS to progressing to being symptomatic for AIDS? Usually that is associated with a decreased T cell count. And so that would be showing up here. Monocytes, general infection, as well as some cancers if there's elevated levels of monocytes, but generally elevated levels of monocytes. And these are the phagocytes, the big, soldiers, if you will, that are out there just generally eating up infection as the antibodies mark them. So you could see elevated levels of monocytes would be an indication of general infection in most cases. Nursing considerations. Briefly here, let's cover this. Nursing considerations, overall health and wellness is tied to our immune system, okay? And it's a vice versa situation. If our immune system is compromised, our overall health and wellness is crappier, right? There's a technical term for you. However, what can you do to improve overall health and wellness? That will also improve the patient's overall immune response when something comes along. So you have elderly patients that are at increased risk for getting the next problem that comes along. Increase their overall health and wellness through exercise and diet and good cardiovascular health. Guess what? These patients are going to be at less risk to get the flu the next time it comes around to flu season. Does it mean they don't get their flu shot? No, it doesn't mean they don't get their flu shot, but it does mean that should they contract a type of flu that wasn't specific for the flu shot, that they may not get as bad a case. Again, improve health, improve immune response. Reduce other stressors in the patient's life. Any kind of stress on the patient, whether it's psychological or physical, will cause a decreased immune response. So take that into account and really focus on finding other things going on in the patient's life and try to reduce stressors for your patients, and you can improve their overall health. monitor for immune compromise. And this could be a lot of different things. Certainly monitor our labs. We want to monitor the patient's overall health. And also compromise to that natural immunity. What is that natural immunity? The barrier of the body itself. So we want to really pay attention to skin integrity. We've talked about ulcers in the past, skin ulcers, bed sores, whatever you want to call them. We can do a lot to improve patient care and reduce hospital-acquired infections just by helping to keep the skin intact. So let's focus on these types of things. Again, prevention is key. It's really important to focus on preventing the infection from ever starting, preventing the need for the immune system to do more than just maintain vigilance. So if we can keep the patient away, the patient that's at risk away from some infectious source, we can therefore keep that patient healthier longer. And so prevention should be something that we keep in the forefront of our mind. Again, I talked about some excellent resources. I urge you to follow up on the resources in the show notes for this particular segment. You will find those over at the main site in the show notes. And I urge you to check those out. There's a lot of good resources there from the National Institutes of Health, from the kidshealth.org, which is part of the Nemours Foundation. They have a great resource there. And good information to educate your patients and their family members. Even though it says Kids Health, the information there is written to be easily understood by all the family, and I would urge you to follow up on that. And there's also some information on laboratory tests and white blood cells there. So you'll find all of those links over in the show notes for this episode. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for checking out the show this week. And I want to remind you that you can head over to nursingshow.com and find links to everything we talked about in this and every other episode. Just head over to nursingshow.com and you'll find the links for show notes right at the top of the page. Go ahead and scroll down to find the episode you're looking for. The most recent episode will be listed first and then go on down in reverse chronological order. So you can find the episode you're looking for that way. Follow up on the information, whether it's the news articles or the additional resource links that I provide for the tip of the week. All of that is available for you at nursingshow.com. I'd love to hear back from you. You can leave comments right there on the website, or you can contact me directly by email. Send those emails in to nursingshow@gmail.com. You'll find also links on the website at nursingshow.com to go ahead and check out the Nursing Show fan page. You can contact me that way. You can find me directly at Facebook by going to facebook.com/podmedic. You can also find the Nursing Show fan page, facebook.com/nursingshow. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/podmedic. You can also get the Nursing Show newsletter. There's a link right there, or a form right there at the top right of the page. You can fill that out. We don't blast you with a lot of extra emails, but we do send you the Nursing Show show notes each week with the links right there built in. Or you can go ahead and check out all the extra article links. We send those out a couple times a month with just links to other articles posted on the site through the course of the month. So to keep you up to date with what's going on over at the Nursing Show, go ahead and sign up for the Nursing Show newsletter. That's it for me. Again, I want to make sure, thank our sponsors. Go ahead and follow up on our sponsor links. You'll find those on the show notes as well. And definitely support the sponsors here at the Nursing Show. They help keep the lights on and help me continue to produce good information and get out to conferences and things like that to continue to bring you information from those other resources as we find them. That's it. We'll go ahead and close out the show. I've got a great song for you by Jeff Smith, G-E-O-F-F Smith. So go ahead and you can find Jeff over at thejeffsmith.com. And this is his song, No More Summertime Blues. It is summertime, so I've been trying to play some more summertime songs here. You'll find those links over in the show notes, or you can go ahead and check out one of Jeff's songs. I've got a link there. You can actually go check out his music over in iTunes. And if you like what you hear, go ahead and check it out and purchase one of his songs. It's a great way to show that you're supporting these independent artists that share their great music here with the Nursing Show listeners and other podcast listeners around the world. That's it for me. I'll go ahead and close out the show and remind you that I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. I'll be back again next week with another episode of The Nursing Show every Friday, ready for you to check out. Remember, you can subscribe for free over at iTunes or in the Zune Marketplace, or just check it out here at nursingshow.com. In the meantime, please remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Let everybody know, 'cause we